Blog Talk Radio.
It's Film Festival Radio, the show where superstars and future stars happily coexist together. And now, here's your host, Janice Malone.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Film Festival Radio Show with me, Janice Malone. Hopefully, you are having a wonderful Resurrection Easter holiday weekend. If you are visiting us here from another city or another country, we welcome you to our beautiful city of Las Vegas, and hopefully you're having a good time with family and friends and such. And that's what we're kind of doing as well. So, as I said, this is usually a holiday weekend, a Christian holiday, and so, but we still have a show for you. We have three guests on board here. We have our good friend Chris Wolfe from Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment, and he is here to tell us about one of their new channels called Popcorn Flicks. And this is a channel that's geared primarily for guys out there, but the guy movies that everybody, especially guys, really love. Instead of, you know, the so-called rom-com, these are kind of more He-Man movies and such. So anyway, Chris will be joining us to tell us what's going on and what's popping at Popcorn Flicks for the month of March. So he will be here not only for March, these films are here for any time that you want to see them. We also have the executive director of the New Filmmakers Los Angeles, Larry LeBeau. He is the executive director, and this is a huge film festival, filmmakers organization. You can go check them out. Their website is newfilmmakersla.com. Not only do they have film festivals throughout the year, they have them every month. Yes, very informative, mini film festivals every month, different themes, different topics. So again, go check their website out, newfilmmakersla.com. You do not have to be living in Los Angeles. You can be living anywhere. If you have a film, any country that you would like to submit that fits their criteria for whatever topic they're handling or dealing with for that month, or just whenever, go look at the website and you should submit if your film is ready. It doesn't have to necessarily be a full-length film. It can be a film short as well. So Larry will be joining us to tell us more about that. We also have a very talented contestant from The Voice. The new season of The Voice is going on, of course, and we're talking with Brian Olesen, and he is on Team John Legend. Brian is 49 years old, and he did not let age stop him where everybody else maybe is in their 20s or so. Brian's got that talent, and he is there on The Voice. We saw him in action last week, and so now we're going to talk to him to find out what was his journey. How did he get on The Voice? We're going to find out. He's going to tell us. So what else do we have? That's it. That's it. Those are our guests for this week's show. So we're going to take a break, and when we return, we'll be chatting with Chris Wolsey from Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment. So let's take a break and we'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Sherry Shepherd and you're listening to Film Festival Radio with Janice Malone.
All right, listeners, especially you guys out there, it is that time of show when we have our resident expert on streaming films and television shows and everything that's cool at the Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment brand. And of course, we're speaking of our friend, Chris Wolsey, Senior Director of Communications for Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment. And Chris, what is hot popping at Popcorn Flicks for the month of March?
Oh my gosh, Janet, we've got so much popping. It's crazy. So as we talked about last month, Popcorn Flicks is kind of our male-centric, adrenaline-fueled action, horror, sci-fi, thriller channel on our family of brands. And we're really excited about a lot of titles that we have on Popcorn Flicks this month. One of the most fun is Grand Isle, starring your favorite and mine, Nicolas Cage. This is also starring Kelsey Grammer. Who's always great.
Yeah.
And this is kind of a, I would probably categorize it as a neo-noir film.
Okay.
It's really good. Takes place in the South. Nicolas Cage is like this jealous husband who's got to watch his wife like a hawk, because he's convinced that she's cheating on him. All these crazy characters. It is, well, you know, like most Nicolas Cage movies, it's a little off the hinges.
Yes.
It's really great. I think this was a hidden gem. Check out Grand Isle.
Grand Isle. Okay. Oh, God. If it's Nick Cage, you know it's going to be off the hinges. It's so funny.
For sure. Has he ever been on the hinge? I don't think so.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. So, okay, that's definitely a dude movie there. Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, we've got another dude movie for you, starring one of my all-time favorite action names, and that is Jean Reno from The Professional.
Oh, nice.
And this is an action film called 22 Bullets. And he plays a retired mobster who unfortunately gets visited by some of his ex-coworkers who decide to gift him 22 bullets in his body. But he survives and decides to go on a revenge streak to repay those coworkers bullet for bullet.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Yeah, that's your...
Really, really fun. So if you're looking for a good Friday night action, you know, popcorn flick, that's definitely the one.
That's it. Especially if you love mob movies like I do. Yes. Okay.
Yep. For sure.
Okay.
For sure.
All 22 bullets. He wants revenge. Okay. Why not? Why not?
Why not?
Why
not?
Not? Well, you know, why not go for 22? Why stop at 15? Yeah. Okay. Okay. And who else is the big dude for March on Popcorn Flicks?
We've got another. Well, this is more of a thriller. So I love the Brian De Palma films of the 80s and 90s, things like Body Double, great edge of your seat thrillers.
Yes.
And we have a great modern version of that called Grand Piano. And this stars Elijah Wood.
I remember
as
watching
a concert pianist who has had a nervous breakdown. And in front of an entire stadium full of people, and he's now relaunching his career, comes to walk out on the stage, opens up his music book in front of an arena full of people, and there's a note inside his music book that says, if you play one wrong note, I will kill you.
Oh,
and he looks down at his hand on the keys, and there's a red laser pointer on his hand. So he knows that somewhere in the arena is a sniper who is going to kill him if he misses one note.
Oh, don't you hate when that happens? Oh,
right?
Goodness.
That's what I'm talking about. And the assassin is played by John Cusack, who also does Unhinged very well.
Yeah.
And it is phenomenal. You will literally be on the edge of your seat the entire time. It is so much fun. And like I said, if you love those taut Brian De Palma films,
yes,
this one is right in that same wheelhouse.
Oh, my God. Okay. Girl, the one we talked about earlier, well, last show, and this one, I'm watching these tonight. I have to.
Yeah. You'll love Grand Piano. It's so great.
Grand Piano. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Nicolas Cage and John Cusack, they need to team up. Do a movie.
They really do. I'm trying to think. Have they ever done anything together? They have not.
Just for
that
people
I,
like
that I know of.
They would be so good. Oh, my God. It's
they would be really good together. We just watched Dream Scenario by Nicolas Cage, the Nicolas Cage film that came out like a year ago. It was an A24 film. Mm-hmm. Very odd, of course, Nicolas Cage,
yes.
But it was great. We loved it.
I know. Every time I think about Nicolas Cage, I just want to laugh a little bit because I love his work, but he just has this style and he just, like you said, does these unhingy movies.
Yeah. About Dream Scenario, he's very unhinged. Oh, my God.
He is so good at it. He is so good.
Yeah, he is.
Okay. Now, as we close, how can people, especially the guys out here, how can they see Popcorn Flix?
Well, they can go to popcornflix.com. That's F-L-I-X.
Okay.
Or, way easier, just download the Popcorn Flix app. You can watch on your mobile, your tablet, your connected TV. And just like Redbox streaming and Crackle streaming, everything on Popcorn Flix is always free.
Oh, love it so much. It is. You can see Nicolas Cage get unhinged in all these movies totally free. Yeah. Just love
it. And if you love action films, if you love kung fu movies, horror films, sci-fi, Popcorn Flix has got it all for free.
Oh, that is so cool. That is so cool. So I know you guys recently launched it. What's been the feedback so far?
Oh, my gosh. People are loving it. You know, people are calling it Man Cave TV. You know, it's just got everything the guys are looking for. Tons of Westerns and, like I said, tons of action films. And it's just, it's all fun. A lot of your favorite names from the 80s, you know, Stallone and mm-hmm. Jean-Claude Van Damme mm-hmm. and Bruce Willis and, you know, all the great action names.
Okay. Popcorn Flix. The app, download it, and you won't regret it. I can already tell you. So, okay, Chris, we will see you next week and find out what's cooking for Chicken Soup for the Soul. So have a great weekend.
You too, Janice. I look forward to talking soon.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, we have all seen our next guest in action. He is one of the very talented contestants on NBC's The Voice. He is on Team John Legend. His name is Brian Olesen. Yes, Brian, he is lives in Lincoln, Nebraska, but he is making a name for himself on The Voice. Now, Brian thought that he was about to go home and it was all over. Not so fast, because his coach, John Legend, used his handy playoff pass to keep Brian on his team. And of course, that meant that Brian moved past the knockout rounds and on into the playoff rounds. Brian has a lot to say about that. We had a wonderful conversation all about his how he got to The Voice. So I can tell you he used to be a band member with the rock Christian rock band, the Newsboys. He's a talented professional musician. I can tell you that Brian has been with some Christian rock bands, the Newsboys being one of them, and some others. So he's going to tell us more about that as soon as we bring him on. So let's bring him on right now. Brian Olesen from Team John Legend from The Voice. So, okay. Well, we have you here, and that's what counts. And you are Brian Olesen. Your story from just being a nice, mild-mannered, talented singer to now a even nicer, mild-mannered singer on The Voice. How did you get here? What's your story?
Oh, you know, there's like most things in music, there's not one path that leads you to whatever, you're looking for, but it was kind of almost a strange accident, like a fluke. My drummer in my band, I play in a band called Voda, and my drummer forwards me this email with a voice casting call on it. And I didn't even read it, but I just replied pretty much and said, you know, hey man, I have no desire to go to some arena, wait there all day with a bunch of teenagers for my turn to audition. Like, cool idea, but I'll be a little bit embarrassed and probably won't go through with that. And then he's like, no, they, you can do some of it online now, where you, they kind of, you know, it's almost like you schedule a Zoom, and you do an audition, you know, over the internet. And I'm like, well, okay, I might be down for that. So that's what I did. And, you know, me and technology aren't always, we're not always on the same page. And I was having trouble getting the thing to work. And I almost closed the laptop and said, forget it, because I was about 4 or 5 minutes late into it trying to get the thing to work. And then it finally worked last second. And then that little audition turned into, you know, it just kept escalating till eventually I get the call to come to LA, which is pretty amazing.
So
I never tried out for any show like this ever in my life. This is the first time.
My goodness. Because as you well know, I'm sure now that a lot of these, you know, The Voice, American Idol, some people tried 4 and 5 times. And so you hit a home run first time out. That's amazing.
It's crazy. I know. I didn't realize that, you know, I don't know the rules for all these things. You know, the basic rule I know is I'm pretty much too old for all of these competitions, but somehow The Voice still lets my generation jump in and give it a shot. So then, as I got to know a lot of the contestants, some of them were like, yeah, I try out every year. This is the first year they've let me in. I'm like, wow, that's incredible.
So what was your reaction? I mean, you're seeing these superstars, you know, wanting you. What was your first thought?
It was surreal. And I forgot, you know, when you're in a moment that intense, afterwards my daughter and I were trying to like recap exactly what happened, and it was surprisingly difficult to do. I couldn't remember a lot of it, but I just know that, you know, I've performed a lot in my life and play a lot of concerts, and that stage was definitely the most nervous I've ever been. Just the way they set it up, it's just so strange, because you've got these big metal doors, you're on TV, and the announcer says 10 seconds till our next contestant, and then, you know, when it's your time, those doors open, nobody introduces you, nobody says your name, there's no audience clapping, it's completely silent, and all I'm hearing is the click of my boots as I'm walking to the microphone, and you've got these thoughts in your head of like, okay, well, I've been preparing this moment for months, and here we go, I've got 90 seconds to kind of make something happen and hopefully turn a chair. So it's so strange, you know, because a concert, you can play a song and maybe the crowd's kind of getting into it, and you have time to adjust to see how to win a crowd over. But in 90 seconds, I've got to win a coach and get that chair to turn, or I'm done. I go home.
Okay, so speaking of going home, that first night, you've won everybody over. You know John Legend is going to be your coach. You get back to the hotel, and then what? I mean, because I know you guys have to keep this a secret for a while. So who did you call, or did you call anybody?
I do remember going back to my hotel room, laying just flat out on the floor and really just crying out to God, thanking him for such an incredible day, because that's how special that moment was.
Oh, that's so great. Now, this was, how long ago was that night?
It was in July.
Oh, that's a while. Okay.
Well, I don't know if some of this, we had to pre-tape some of that. So mm-hmm. the way it goes is just that went in production it was more late last year.
Okay. Late last year. So, okay. So between July and the airing, how did you keep that a secret from the rest of the family?
Well, my boys knew what was up, because they made a special video for me for going to LA, and, you know, for the most part, yeah, I there was a couple close people that knew what was going on, and then I just went on as business as usual until everything aired.
Oh, I know that was tough, though.
It was tough, but it was also
worth it.
It was also It was exciting knowing that I couldn't wait to see it myself, and I'd forgotten so much about the moment, and I was like looking forward to seeing it on TV myself so I could recap exactly what happened.
So was there a big viewing party at your home? I understand you're from Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yes, not for the blind audition. I happened to be doing another concert in the Florida area. So we didn't have a big viewing party out there, but I was able to have one for the battle round in Lincoln, and that was super fun having all my friends and family out for that. And it was really awesome when it came to the point where they picked Nathan as the winner, like the whole room went silent. They're like, oh no, Brian's going home.
And I know you probably said, well, hold on, just hold on, hold on here.
Just hang in there, hang in there.
Oh, my God. Two steals and a playoff pass. You're so there. Reminds me of, you know, the baseball games, you know, the playoffs and such. That's you. You're there. So,
that was incredible. I mean, that talk about emotional roller coaster. I prepared to go home, giving my speech to leave, walking off stage, and then back in. And then I kind of forgot about the playoff pass in the moment. I was literally in my mind thinking, am I going to go to Team Reva or am I going to go to Dan and Shay? I was trying to think of the other contestants on the team and who I didn't want to sing against and all of that stuff. And then all of a sudden, boom, playoff pass. And I just couldn't believe it. It was wonderful.
Good.
I still kept one of the streamers that fell from the ceiling. I've got it right here on my nightstand.
I don't blame you. I would frame that Joker and keep it for a lifetime. That's so cool.
You got it. I will. I'm going to do something, maybe weave it into one of my outfits.
That's a really good idea and such. So, okay. When you know, I know obviously you've seen the show like all of us have. So, but when you actually get there and you really are performing, is it a lot more of a challenge than you thought it was going to be, or not as scary? I mean, I know you mentioned earlier what some of that is like, but I mean, is it more of a challenge than you've anticipated?
Well, I've sung twice now. So the first one, the blind audition, definitely, you know, nerves, because there's just so much buildup. Because by the time I answered the email and all the things I had to go through before I got invited out to LA, and then all the practice I went through and wardrobe and all this sort of stuff, meeting with producers before I actually sung the song, it's just incredible, crazy buildup, you know? But the time from the blind audition to the battle is a lot shorter, and now you're in. And so it really was a whole different feel for me. I was excited. Once we settled into our battle song, Nathan and I were just great friends. I'm not the only one up there on stage, so that's another thing. And I felt more myself of like, all right, here we go, let's bring it, you know. And what's beautiful about that studio, at least for me as a performer, is there's an incredible sound system in that room. You know, that room looks like it's massive, and it is big, but it's not like a big festival stage. But it felt like the sound system that they had in the room was like concert level. So I love that. It was easy to get into the energy of the music and hearing the band, and the energy in the room was pretty electric. It's like being at a concert.
Well, I can only imagine how proud your fellow band members of VOTA are of you. So tell us, because you guys are not just a good band, you support various causes. So tell us about some of that.
Yeah, well you know, it's early on, a part of, I feel, my mission is to use music to connect people that need help with people that can help. And way back, it started, we would do high school assemblies all across the U.S. We've done over 400 of them, where we set up the band and we would have a featured speaker, and we would just encourage kids and their decision making and their character. And then we worked with an organization to fight human trafficking in Nepal specifically. And amazingly, you know, back at the time when people were still buying albums, we came up with this cool campaign to where if they gave any dollar amount would go to this organization to build these border stations to help stop traffickers from taking young kids across the border. And we raised, the goal was to raise $150,000 to support 5 border stations. And we actually were able to raise over $180,000 and support and staff those border stations for 5 years. And I just got a recent update that close to 700 plus young children have been intercepted at just our five stations alone. So letting that sink in, realize that, wow, we got to, you know, have fun doing our music, but also use it in a way that has spared the lives of these young children from a horrific existence. And so, you know, when you get involved in good work like that, it's just infectious. And for us, we're always looking for creative ways to team up with worthwhile NGOs that just need a little bit of a voice about what they're doing. And so it's kind of a win-win all around.
Gosh, what a worthy cause. You're providing great music and entertainment and, you know, putting a dent in this human trafficking evilness. That's wonderful. So cool. So really nice of you, Brian. Well, now, okay. What is, we know you got the voice going on. And so how is this? I cannot even imagine how being on this show is helping your band and yourself. I mean, what are some really other cool things that have happened to you?
I'll be honest. My band, we started working on an album that we really wanted to just be true to us. And what I mean by that is, like, we've done a lot. I led worship in a church for 10 years and did a lot of music in the Christian community, which I love and will continue to do. But we wanted to make an album that was that just dared to be authentic. And sometimes when you do that, you can't be thinking about, well, what radio stations will play it? You know, will anybody care? Like, how is this going to go out? And we started making that album going, you know what, we have to love it first and we have to be proud of it. And whatever happens after that, we'll, if we're proud of it, that's all that matters. And we had that mindset and we started working on this album before The Voice happened. And so then The Voice comes out of nowhere. And I just finished this album of 10 songs that I can't do any release at this point because, you know, of until I'm completely finished with The Voice. And if I ultimately win The Voice, I actually get a record contract. It's just the timing is so interesting and strange. And it's like, you know what, maybe we will have a voice of people that will be curious about, you know, the music that we're doing now. So that's a pretty exciting thing for us that we kind of took a bold leap of faith to make an album that we wanted to be proud of before even The Voice was a thing for us.
That's so cool. Yeah, I see where you were once with one of my favorite bands, the Newsboys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still great friends with those guys. Peter Furler, the former lead singer, Voda is his backing band, so I actually handle a lot of the booking for Peter, and we still do a lot of shows with him and play a lot of those Newsboys classics that I played when I was in the band, and I'm still friends with all those guys, and it's so yeah, and they've been cheering me on as well.
That's so nice. Well, okay, how can listeners, viewers, fans, how can they follow you, the band, and to see where you guys are going to be performing and just to follow you? What do they need to do?
Well, on the band side, you can go to votaband.com, and that's VOTA band.com. And then you'll see a lot of the different mission organizations that we've worked with. You'll have access to a few music videos that we've done and some of our most recent music. And then on socials, it's at Brian Olson, B-R-Y-A-N. And my last name is spelled kind of funky. There's two E's in it, O-L-E-S-E-N. It's not a beautiful stage name by any means, but it's my name. So
it
is what it is.
Yeah, it works out just fine. Lots of cool Brians out here, so it works out well. I tell you, Brian, you have an incredible, what a motivational, inspiring story. And for people who are maybe not exactly 25 years old and they want to try out for The Voice, what do you have to say to them?
I hope my story will encourage them. We can easily get in our head about and talk ourselves out of so many things. We just assume, you know, something negative will happen or people will laugh at me or, you know, whatever. And I just feel like life is too short. And I hope my story at least encourages people to not play it too safe. You know, like think about someday when we're not useful as much as we were in our youth when we're sitting there and just kind of barely and enjoying each day and reflect back, I don't think you'll regret taking a chance on something you feel like you really want to do it. Because even if you fall on your face, you're gonna learn something about it. It's going to make you stronger if you get up and keep going. And so I hope if that injects a little bit of adrenaline into a few souls, then mission accomplished.
Absolutely. Totally so. Well, we will look forward to seeing you in action as the competition rolls along. It's a tough show, but when you got talent like you, it's a piece of cake, it seems.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'll take that. cheer me on. I'll give it my best. I will promise you that.
Okay. Well, we're going to definitely cheer you on. So we will see you ride it out with The Voice. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thanks for taking the time with me today.
Okay, then. Have a great rest of the day.
You too. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye. We are back and just want to remind you that you are listening to Film Festival Radio Show with me, Janice Malone, on our holiday special weekend here. And so that brings me to our next guest here. He is the executive director of the New Filmmakers Los Angeles Film Festival organization. His name is Larry LeBeau. And again, he is the executive director and founder of it. This is a wonderful film festival organization. They are huge. Not only do they have film festivals, but they have them every month. Yes, they have many film festivals every month, and these festivals cover a variety, just a wide range of topics, themes, I should say, LGBTQ+ films and filmmakers, the Latina, African-American, immigration films, disability-type films that focus on that topic, international animation, just a long, long list. So I highly encourage you, if you are a filmmaker and maybe your film has a particular theme, again, go to their website. It's newfilmmakersla.com. This website is loaded with great information about their organization, as well as just a plethora of other information that's going on throughout the film festival world. And just because it's based in L.A., that does not mean that you have to be an L.A.-based filmmaker. You can be from here in Vegas or really anywhere in the world. So, again, it's newfilmmakersla.com. And so if you have a film, a short or a full length or whatever the length of the film, maybe you'd like to enter, go to their film website, their film festival website. So just go to their film festival website and take a look around and see what it takes for submissions. So I had the opportunity, again, to chat with the executive director of the New Filmmakers Los Angeles. Again, his name is Larry LeBeau. And so let's roll it with my chat. Okay, listeners, I have on board my next guest. His name is Larry LeBeau, and he is the executive director of New Filmmakers Los Angeles, of course, in Los Angeles. So, Larry, hello to you, and I've heard so much about your organization and all the fine work that you do in the world of independent filmmaking. So thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you so much, Janice. I'm excited to be here, and I'm excited to talk to you.
Well, New Filmmakers, you guys have a lot of unique programs and such, but tell us about, I understand that each month you have different events. And tell us about just some of them, because you have a lot of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, most people know film festivals as once-a-year events. The typical festival format for most film festivals is annual and tends to take place over anywhere from 4 to 15 days once a year, over a week or two. And those types of formats usually have anywhere from 100 to 250 movies in that annual edition, in that short span of time. And unlike that format, what our festival does is we're a monthly film festival in Los Angeles. So instead of having that 100 to 250 movies all in one chunk of time once a year, we instead break that chunk of movies up as small batches of movies, and we play those movies on a monthly basis. So filmmakers can submit to us at any time of the year, no matter when they finish their film. And within several months of submitting to us, if they're selected, they can have an opportunity in Los Angeles to screen on a monthly basis throughout the year. And so we are always accepting submissions. We are always programming, and we are always coming up on a monthly festival date. And we just actually had this March edition of our festival on March 9th this past weekend, which was our In Focus female cinema program at the festival, where we were celebrating women as part of International Women's Day and Women's History Month. And so we had three amazing programs, two of which were dedicated to female cinema, one of which was a feature film directed by a male but written by a female writer. Next month we have our program dedicated to disabilities and entertainment. So we're going to have a block of programming dedicated to those who work in entertainment with disabilities and stories around disability in film. Moving right after that, we'll celebrate our May festival edition, which will be In Focus Asian cinema. We're always very, very busy, and our festival really never stops.
It sounds like it. Always a flurry of activity there. My goodness.
Absolutely.
Never a dull moment here. Can filmmakers, if their film happens to maybe cover more than one category, can they submit to different events?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we encourage filmmakers to submit whenever their film is finished. So a filmmaker, it isn't advised that a filmmaker wait for any one specific festival that we might have based on a theme or a certain program. It's better that regardless of a filmmaker's background or the type of content that they've made, be it animation or a short narrative film or a feature documentary film, we want them to definitely submit that content to us as soon as it's available. And we have an amazing programming committee, which is made up of about 15 individuals from various jobs and backgrounds in entertainment who review all the films that are submitted to us. And they work with our programming director, Boyana Sandick, who is incredible. She's had a long history working in film festivals. She was the Shorts programming director for 5 years at the Newport Beach Film Festival. She worked on a program with Lexus, the company called Lexus Short Films, which funded short films by emerging filmmakers and took those to festivals globally. And she's been with New Filmmakers full-time now for the past 7 years. She's also done a lot of festival jury service. So she's done Cucolores, Outfest, Palm Springs, New Orleans Film Festival, Slam Dance. So she's got a great, great abundance of experience. And so she works with those programming committee members to put that content together and curate that content for all of our festivals. And she's always looking for different projects by different filmmakers and different formats, different run times, and, you know, all types of disciplines. So animation, documentary, narrative. So definitely best to submit to us as soon as you have a project that's finished and ready to be submitted to festivals.
Now, can this be full length and shorts or regular short films, or does it matter?
Absolutely. So we play both. So we play short films and we also play feature films. Typically in a calendar year, we program about 200 short films and anywhere from 20 to 30 feature films. So the feature film category is a bit more selective. It's definitely a bit more competitive to get into due to the higher number of short films that we play, but we do accept both and we do play both.
And so even though you guys are based in Los Angeles, do the films have to be California-based or LA-based film, or can they be films from filmmakers here in Vegas or anywhere?
Yeah, that's a great question. So absolutely, they do not need to be filmmakers from Los Angeles or California or even the United States.
Oh.
They can be and are filmmakers that we have submitted to us and programmed with us from all over the world. So I would say on average, anywhere from about 30 to 40% of every monthly film festival is outside of California, if not outside of the United States. We have a very large number of international filmmakers that play their films with us. We have a large number of domestic filmmakers from outside of California that play their films with us. We have filmmakers from all over the state of California. And then, of course, we do have an abundance of filmmakers from within LA that submit and play their movies. But we definitely are a very global film organization and festival, and we definitely want and encourage filmmakers from anywhere, regardless of their location, to submit.
That is very good to hear. That is, oh my goodness, because I get so many emails from people, filmmakers, wanting to know that question about whether it's a LA-based film festival or, you know, are there limitations on it? And so you've just answered that thoroughly. So that's
Yeah, it can be tricky. You know, it's called New Filmmakers LA. But really, we are for independent filmmakers anywhere in the world. And so another, you know, question a lot of people have for us is, what does a new filmmaker mean? And for us as an organization, we really interpret the name New Filmmakers to equate more to the idea of anyone who's really an independent content creator, anybody who still needs resources in terms of reaching audiences, tapping into industry resources, be those resources, be connections, relationships, you know, products, services, other things that they really need access to support the advancement of their careers. So when we say New Filmmakers LA, sure, that can be a student, that can be someone who's younger, you know, but it's not really somebody who's making amateur content. It's somebody who's making strong, independent content. That's worthy of being seen by audiences, that's worthy of being seen by industry, and that, you know, really can serve as a stepping stone for someone to advance their career using the festival.
And to further speak of advancing careers and stepping stones and such, how long has New Filmmakers existed?
So come July 1st, we will celebrate 17 years. So we founded the organization in August of 2007. And so come July of this year, we will hit our 17-year anniversary.
You guys have been around for a minute or two there. That's great to hear.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, we're excited about that for sure.
And so what I was thinking is that you obviously been around that long, lots of stepping stone success stories of filmmakers, films. Can you give us two or three who have been showcased and premiered at your festival?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I'll start with just some really exciting recent success stories of people who are pretty new in their career. We just had a filmmaker in our September 2023 program. Her name is Blaine Morris, and she went on with her latest film in January 2024. To play at Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really exciting to see, you know, an early career short filmmaker come play with us in September and just four short months later to have another film that premiered at Sundance this past January. We have so many other filmmakers that have been playing with us either one or multiple times over the past 10 plus years, like Shaz Bennett, who went on to showrun Queen Sugar for Ava DuVernay on two seasons, I think season 7 and season 8. And just so many stories like that of filmmakers who have come through the festival, tapped into resources for the festival, won awards at the festival, gotten their first industry jobs through the festival. Another example from 2023 is Elaine Del Valle, who played her film with us, I believe, in April or March of 2023. And one of the meetings that she did at the festival landed her a job directing a $1 million movie for Tubi called Midnight Hustle. So, yeah, a lot of really incredible stories like that, not only where we've seen filmmakers who come through the festival go on to really advance in their career in major ways, but also where those advancement opportunities have been a direct result of meetings that they've taken at the festival or people who have seen their film at the festival. So that's always really exciting for us.
Oh, it sounds like it's just like a, you know, proud parent and their kid is out here in the world making a name for themselves. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's really the filmmakers, you know, like they are, so many of the filmmakers who come through the festival are just really hungry and they're really hustling for opportunities in their career. And they're really pouring a lot of passion and commitment into the work that they're doing. And that work really speaks for itself. And I think, you know, people see that reflected in the content, but they also see that reflected in the ambition that those filmmakers have. And that ambition really translates for them.
Well, I got a couple of last questions here. Does New Filmmakers offer maybe seminars, workshops on script writing, directing, latest trends, you know, things of that nature?
We do, yeah. So we have workshops, conversations, and panels at every single monthly film festival. And what's great about those are actually, most of the festival is held in person in Los Angeles. So all the exhibitions of the films, the Q&As with the filmmakers, of course, the mixers with receptions, all of that's in person. But a lot of the education activities, the things that you just mentioned, those are held virtually. So we have a minimum of two of those every month, and they're on various topics like the ones that you mentioned, such as writing, producing, financing, marketing, directing for film, directing for TV. So in total, over 24 panels that are offered every year throughout the year. And those are accessible to anybody, anywhere in the world. And not only, you know, are those workshops where people can learn from professionals and creatives, but they can also ask questions to those professionals and creatives on camera virtually as part of those monthly workshops. So definitely that's a very big part of the festival, and it's something that we offer all year. And I would highly recommend, you know, people, regardless of where they're located, tap into those, because they're a great opportunity to meet new people and to learn new things. And a lot of our filmmakers find them very helpful.
And I think that is so wise and so gracious and of you guys to have those workshops open virtually to people anywhere in the world. That's awesome. Quite awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
And finally, where do you stand? What is your opinion about, we know we've, especially during the strike, after the strike, we heard all of this talk about how AI is going to heavily impact the film industry, the television, the writing, all of that, but not necessarily in a good way, according to some. Where do you stand about Hollywood and AI?
That's a tough question. I mean, I think I have a lot of the same concerns that the creative community has of how, you know, it can be looked at with a bit of concern and fear in regards to its ability to potentially, its ability to replace jobs in the entertainment industry. And I'll talk more specifically about some of the ways that I see it, you know, replacing hours for now, right?
Yeah.
We're not going to call it in what I will talk about in terms of replacing jobs. We're going to talk about the way it's shaving down or replacing the hours of work that are available. And I'll focus specifically that around like post-production as an example. So when you have, you know, AI can make a lot of tweaks with, let's say, sound or levels of sound in post-production that human hours would have been used to manually tweak previously, I think a human is still necessary to make final tweaks on a project and adjustments and do a final master of like post-production sound. But I think AI certainly shortens the time that human may need to be working on that project, therefore shortening their work day, work hours, and pay, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, like, for that kind of concern, using that as an example, it can be a blessing and a curse, right? Like, for independent films and filmmakers who really don't have budgets, like, that can help speed up the process. That can really assist them in maybe accomplishing some of the things they don't have the skill set to accomplish themselves, and that kind of craft expertise job. But I think in, you know, the larger ecosystem of entertainment, where people do have infrastructure and jobs that they rely on in those spaces, and there is infrastructure in terms of, you know, a studio system or a network and financing in place to cover those kinds of jobs that may be eliminated, not entirely, but at least, you know, portions of those jobs or hours from those jobs. I think that's where the concern comes. And so I think there's a lot of possibilities with AI that can be exciting for the creative community, but also, you know, a lot of disruption in the ways that I talked about. So I think it's just something we all have to really watch and pay attention to and monitor, and really, as a community, I think we need to, you know, make decisions about AI together, democratically, as to, you know, how it's implemented in all ways, not just in entertainment.
Absolutely. I know I have found it to be helpful, but not totally dependent upon it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyway, Larry, give us the main question is, how can filmmakers get in on all of this information and education about what New Filmmakers Los Angeles offers them? What is the magic URL?
Yeah, so our website is N, like new, F, like film, M, like makers, so NFMLA, like Los Angeles, .org. And I'll just repeat that again. It's NFMLA.org. And you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn and many other platforms using NFMLA. And yeah, definitely our website, NFMLA.org, is the best resource in terms of finding everything that's coming up in terms of programming, joining our newsletter. You know, we have an industry resources page on our website with links to other organizations, grants, accelerator programs, incubators, all kinds of different opportunities on our industry resources page. But our website's great, and you can find all of our social media pages from there. You can submit your film through our website using Film Freeway, the film submission platform. So it's kind of a one-stop shop.
It's a very thorough website. I mean, you guys even have jobs in other companies listed on there, which is very helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we've tried to build a place over the years, plugging in a lot of the resources that people have asked us for, just to make it available in one place and easy for people to find.
Well, you've done a very, very good job in doing that. So again, Larry LeBeau, thank you so much for joining me and sharing just a little bit, because it's a lot of what New Filmmakers LA does. And you guys are such a blessing to the film community. And I just say congratulations coming up on, what, your 17 years this summer. So that's awesome.
Thank you so much, Janice. Yeah, this has been great. And we appreciate you having us and spreading the word about the organization. And hopefully we'll see a lot of the filmmakers that listen at some of the upcoming festivals.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll continue to spread the word out, because sometimes we give an announcement about, you know, different events and such in other cities, and because we have listeners from everywhere, all over the world and such. So we will definitely be plugging more events that you guys are doing in the immediate future, starting next month. That one.
Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Okay. Okay. We are so out of time for this edition of the show. Thank you, Larry LeBeau from New Filmmakers Los Angeles. Want to thank our other guest, Brian Olison from The Voice. We wish him luck. Maybe he'll win it. And of course, we want to thank our good friend, Chris Wolsey from Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment. So everybody, have a very blessed, safe, and happy Resurrection weekend, Easter weekend, and we'll see you guys on our next show. So take care. Bye-bye.